You go to any workshop on communication, and you'll be presented with the idea that we judge communication by the result that it produces. Communication is a process that involves somebody having a message that they want to transmit. So they encode that message and they transmit it. Someone else receives the message and decodes it. And the measure of communication really comes down to, does the idea that was in the head of the person who sent the message at all resemble what showed up in the head of the person who received the message?
Sorry. Hearing at the back.
Okay. I'll try. Yeah. We have two different heights here working the microphone, so we'll have to keep that in mind as we go along here. So one of the things that's a problem for those of us who end up in places like Al-Anon is that we have these things that sometimes we call them defects of character. In the New Awareness group, they call them ways of coping that later proved inappropriate. But what we have is these things about us that kind of get in the way of our ability to communicate. And what Al-Anon does for me is it shows me how to deal with those obstacles on my part. One of the first things that we need to recognize is that there are problem subjects. I'm going to go back to this. It's not a problem for me to say to somebody, "Hey, the weather outside is really nice today." But when we get into certain areas, it becomes steadily more difficult for me to speak comfortably or to feel safe talking about whatever it is that's on the table. The ones that tend to be kind of universal problem areas are things like sex, money, chores, kids, family. These are the subjects that, speaking for myself as a codependent guy, when Karen raises one of those, something inside me just wants to flee screaming from the room. And the fact that I can sit through a conversation on those things, participate in a conversation on those things these days, is a testament to some of the things that you have taught me. Karen?
One of the things that we have to look at whenever we're having I'm going to speak for myself. When I find myself thinking about a subject, and I'm really thinking about the subject over and over and over again, I have to say to myself, how important is this subject? Is it something that needs to be brought to the forefront? Is it something that needs to be discussed? We have that little slogan in Al-Anon that's really quite important, and it's, how important is this? When I used to think about the slogan, how important is this, I looked at it from the perspective of, well, it's not that important. I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. And I've done that a lot in my life. I've made mountains out of molehills. And I've created dramas and chaos out of stuff that really didn't need to be made into drama and chaos. But frequently, there'll be something in the back of my mind that just keeps coming up. And if it keeps coming up for me, even though it on the surface may not appear to be very important, it's very important. You know, we can go through chaos together. We can go through family crises together. We can support each other in that. But sometimes it's the small things in life, at least for me, that really seem to be a problem with communication. And as Richard had previously mentioned, it's those things like money and chores and such. Especially with chores for me, right? It's that idea of, well, he's working and I have my Friday off, so I'll do this, and it's not that important. And after a while, I have to say to myself, it's important. But I need to become clear for myself on what I need to say. How important is something to me? I need to know what it is that's bothering me. And there's a number of different methods that we can use in order to become clear on what it is and how it's important for us, or how important it is to us. One of the things we can do is journal. Sometimes when something's really bothering me, and I'm not even sure what it is, I'll dig out a piece of paper or a booklet, and I'll just write, without judgment, just write. And over throughout that process, it becomes more clear what it is that seems to be bothering me. We can phone a sponsor or a close friend in the program. Often, it's the, well, I don't think this isn't really that big of a deal, but, and you get a different perspective. Just getting out of your own head, getting out of my head, because the stuff that goes on in my head sometimes is pretty busy. So phoning a sponsor or a close friend in the program. Doing an inventory. Do a step four. What is it about this particular area that is bothering me? Look at the traditions. I love the traditions. I actually, when I first learned about the traditions or started hearing them, they seemed to be gobbledygook. But when I learned the concept of traditions are the ways of keeping sick groups together and for relationships, it became more clear that the spiritual principles that were found in those traditions could be the same principles that would help in communication within the concept of a relationship. So before going on into a conversation with somebody about something that's bothering me, I need to know what it is and how important it is to me.
So when we have these difficult areas of conversation, the other thing that becomes important is how we approach it. One of the things that Karen and I talk about is instead of demanding a conversation, right? We need to talk about this. Instead, expressing an invitation to an invitation. And Karen's going to talk about that for a minute.
You know, one of the favorite things I used to do before program was when I decided something was important, I used to sort of blindside Richard with this invitation to a conversation. Actually, it wasn't. It was kind of a demand. And it was at these times of the day that were really inappropriate. Right upon wakening, when I'd been up for 2 hours and it was time for him to get up and he's kind of, well, we got to talk about this now. And the poor guy didn't even have his morning cup of coffee and his eyes weren't even open. Like, that's probably not a great time to do that. So when we're trying to think about how do we ask somebody to have a conversation with us about something that's been bothering us, like how do we do that? Some of the stuff is really, really basic, you know. But if you're like me, the basic stuff might be common sense. I just don't practice it. I need to have it laid out. So crafting an invitation to a conversation. One of the first things I need to realize is who needs to be involved in that particular conversation. In that communication. If it's myself and Richard, then those two people should be involved. I should not actually have that in conversation amongst my, say, mother and my sister. That would be inappropriate. So who should be present at the conversation? The second thing I need to look at is what needs to be talked about. What is the topic? What is the situation that created the conflict? What is it that's bothering me? If I've gone through all that journaling and talking and thinking about what it is that bothers me, I should have a pretty clear idea about what it is I need to discuss. And then when? When should the conversation take place? When's actually the best time to approach a person with an invitation to have this conversation? As I said before, perhaps first thing in the morning before Richard's first cup of coffee is not a great time. You know? For me, after 8:30 of night is not a great time to approach me because I'm falling asleep, especially on a work day. And then where? Where should I invite my spouse, if it's my spouse, to this conversation? Perhaps after supper, after Thanksgiving supper at my mother-in-law's, in front of all my relatives, or his relatives, as the case may not be a good idea or a place to say, "Hi, honey, I think that we should get together and talk about sex tomorrow." I'm sure it would get a reaction, but probably not the one I'm looking for. And then why? I need to know what the goal of the conversation is. What am I hoping to achieve here? Why, if it's important to me and I need to communicate that to somebody, I need to be able to express why it's important and what the goal is. And then how? How should the invitation be delivered to the person? Over the phone? What words should be used, etc.? When we're looking at how, we have so many forms of communication these days. We have text. We have telephone calls, we have face-to-face, and it's just amazing how many couples that I've seen use text to be able to communicate back and forth to one another, and how much communication is actually lost in the form of texting. the shortcuts, the misspellings, all those wonderful kinds of things. So if it's something that is really, really important to me, I try my best to actually deliver that invitation in person, face-to-face, because that's where we get the most communication, is face-to-face.
Over the years, Karen and I both, we've each been asked on occasion to sponsor one half of a couple that have come into recovery together, and any time that this couple texts to each other, I come back to this idea that, you know, first of all, anybody in early recovery who's in a relationship should have their cell phone taken away. And I believe that you should have to write a licensing exam to do texting. So in terms of crafting that invitation to a conversation, that invitation needs to be positive and neutral and non-blaming and solution-focused, which is all just a way of saying non-threatening. I mean, we need to try to make this as welcoming and as productive as we possibly can. So what we talk about is approaching this from the perspective of report your feelings in three words. Okay, and the first two words in that are I feel. So you've got one word left. So, and that word needs to be a feeling word. I continually have conversations with guys that go along the lines of, I feel that is not a feeling, it's an opinion, right? And if that is creeping into that sentence, then we need to re-examine what we're doing there. Report the occurrence that produced the feeling. What's the source of the problem here? And why is it important to me? Okay, what is it that I would rather see happen, or what need or desire on my part isn't being met? And to put that all together in as kind and loving a language as we possibly can. The other thing to look at is from the perspective of receiving that invitation to a conversation. I need to recognize that if my partner has taken the step of bringing forward this subject, that it is important to them. And that's something that I would miss chronically in the past, that Karen would bring something up with me and I would dismiss it, and she would bring something up with me and I would dismiss it, and she would bring something up with me and I would dismiss it. Well, you know, the person who is my life mate and supposedly the most important person in my life is trying to raise something that is important to her. Maybe I want to think about that being important to me. And that's something that Al-Anon had to teach me in order to get to. Okay.
To be fair to the poor guy, the way I invited him to conversations was probably not exactly appropriate either. You know, those words of being positive and neutral and non-blaming and solution-focused, those didn't exist in our everyday occurrence. So an invitation to a conversation or to participate might have included, like, this is a real-life example. So I'm going to visit my parents for Christmas. Are you coming or what? And seriously, that was a conversation, and it wasn't received. And I thought it was a choice. I thought I was inviting him. You know, apparently that's not the way Al-Anon teaches us to do things. But when I first read The Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage, I read the chapter on communication, which is the longest chapter in The Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage. And I do believe Virginia has some copies of The Dilemma back at the literature table. If you haven't actually read it, I highly recommend it. It is so basic. The first time I read that chapter, my head said, yeah, I know that. And by the time I finished it, I had that quiet, calm voice, you know, the one that I knew wasn't coming from my head, that said, okay, Karen, you may know all this stuff, but do you practice it? And I didn't like the question. I really didn't. So I actually went back through The Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage and that chapter of communication, and I started making notes because I didn't practice it. And I can think I know something in my head. And that might be head knowledge. And until I actually practice it, I don't have an experience and I have no wisdom. It's with that head knowledge combined with actual experience that we gain a different perspective and we can actually change our lives. There are five guides to communication in the dilemma of the alcoholic marriage. On the little cards that we passed out, and by the way, these were made a number of years ago. They were made for me because I couldn't remember the five guides to communication. And I figured if I could have something small like this and put it in my wallet, that maybe I could start to remember it. Because I can certainly tell you I didn't practice these guides to communication in my daily relationships. I could tell you about them, perhaps, but I didn't practice them. And it was kind of an invitation to myself to actually start to look at these different things. And they're pretty basic. Communicate. The guide number one, discuss, don't attack. I could go from nice to nasty in 0.3 seconds or less, and I could make things really personal. That had nothing to do with the subject. Absolutely nothing. So to actually discuss a subject and not attack the person. Later in the Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage, it talks about, somewhere in there, it's more of the way in which we approach a situation that is contentious rather than situations themselves. Something along that line. And I found that to be true. So point number two. Keep the voice low and pleasant. Once again, that was Richard's laughing because that wasn't our experience. I might be small, but you know, I can raise my voice.
She's small, but she's feisty.
I had to. Justification and rationalization, whatever. But I had to. You see, I would try and bring something up to him, and he didn't seem to hear me because he would change my words around. And then he didn't really get my point. So I would have to raise my voice. And then I just remember this one time having this two-hour, one-sided conversation. At the end of it, he's cowering in the corner and I can't talk. That's not exactly a way of having a conversation. Not something that's actually you're going to come out being feeling clean about anyway. Okay, guide number three, stick to the subject. Stick to the subject. How am I going to get my grievance in for the last 15 years? Like, I have this list that I don't even know I have. And sometimes when we're having a conversation or a heated discussion, which we don't usually have anymore, but I would bring up all these things from the last God knows how many years. That's not fair. Stick to the subject. Oh, this one's hard. Four, listen to complaints. In our stress relief kits, there's a button in there. And it has to do with helping to keep my lips buttoned shut. You know, that's a really good thing to do sometimes. When we actually come together to have a conversation, what I need to be able to do is allow the other person the dignity of expressing themselves and just keep quiet. I'll have my turn, but I need to just keep quiet. So I get to listen to complaints. And I actually get to listen to somebody saying something about me that I may not want to hear. That's really, really hard. I remember one time our eldest daughter had decided she needed to share some stuff with me. And I sat outside and she read a letter that she had pre-written. And there was some stuff in there that was really, really, really hard to hear. It's really hard to hear. And I thank God for the dilemma. Listened to complaints. I kept my mouth shut. You know, I was able to allow her to say what she needed to say. And it was good. And number five, don't make demands. Again, once again, for me, really, really tough. So five guides to communication. And hopefully you all got a card. Maybe they'll help you too. They certainly helped me.
I think that the dilemma of the alcoholic marriage is perhaps the best kept secret in all of Al-Anon's literature. I think that the WSO Literature Committee, when they named that book, they probably did us a disservice. If they had called it How to Get Along with Difficult People, they would sell a ton more copies. But, you know, we continually meet people who could benefit from what's in there, but they're going, well, I'm not married to an alcoholic. okay, that's really not what it's about. It's just the title. That idea of listen to complaints. In How Al-Anon Works, there's this fabulous passage that we actually used at a meeting the other night on listening. It was, of course, communication is a two-way street. Not only is it important to improve the way we express ourselves, we must also examine the way we allow others to express themselves. We needn't always respond to what is said, nor accept everything we hear as truth, but we do hope to develop relationships in which all concerned can be themselves and say what is on their minds and hearts. Are we good listeners? Do we grant other people the time to say what they need to say, to clarify their thoughts, even to say things we don't like to hear? Or do we interrupt, finish other people's sentences for them, or stop listening altogether while we prepare our response? Are we open-minded about what others have to say, or do we quickly become defensive? Most of us find that if we want others to hear what we have to say with courtesy, we must extend the same consideration to them. But being a good listener is more than a matter of courtesy. Al-Anon's slogan, "Listen and Learn," reminds us that if we have the self-discipline to be quiet and pay attention to others' words, we can learn a tremendous amount about ourselves and our world. That is on page 98 of How Al-Anon Works for Families and Friends of Alcoholics. And the guys that I talk about this stuff with, where we invariably end up with is one simple idea that was foreign to me when I got here. I think it tends to be foreign to us, left to our own devices without a program of recovery. And that idea is shut up and listen. Like I have to think of it for myself in those terms. Richard, it's Karen's turn to talk. Shut up and listen. Another area that we need to pay particular attention to is that idea of respect and courtesy. When we are encoding the message that we want to transmit, to do that in a way that is respectful of the person that we're talking to, what it comes down to is that how we say what we say is important. How Al-Anon Works has something to say about that too.
This, once again, by the way, is on page 98. But not all of our communication is determined by what we do or do not say. It also depends upon how we say it. Not only our choice of words, but also our attitudes, facial expressions, and tone of voice can either open a channel or slam a door, regardless of the subject being discussed. All people, from the cashier at the drugstore to our children, deserve our courtesy. Any message can be conveyed with courtesy, even one of outrage. If we treat people well when we speak what is in our minds and hearts, they are much more likely to hear what we have to say. This takes courage. It is much easier to let our words convey compliance while our tone of voice expresses contempt. This is a way of communicating anger without taking responsibility for it. Instead, we have the option to say exactly how we feel with as much respect and as we can muster. We are apt to get better results this way. But even if we don't, we will know that we have behaved with integrity. As we become the kind of people we admire, we learn more appropriate ways to express our thoughts and feelings. One of the ways that we communicate in the encoding the message is to be able to use I statements. That idea of stating I feel rather than you make me. One of the things that it mentioned in this reading was getting people to understand what we're saying, right? If I say to somebody, you make me feel, well, first of all, it's a lie. Nobody can make me feel anything. And secondly, it puts somebody on the defensive. I know that personally when somebody says, you make me feel to me, I automatically shut down. I have a right to express my feelings. I truly do. But I need to know what they are, and I need to be able to communicate them in a respectful and appropriate manner. So I need to be able to start with, I feel. if I'm starting with, you make me, it's not true.
The other thing that we need to keep front of mind is expressing our own feelings. And by that I mean our own feelings. There's a fairly popular Al-Anon speaker out of Nashville who talks about this as a disease of pronouns. You know, that you ask somebody who's new to Al-Anon, how do you feel today? Oh, well, we're doing just fine. Okay, or you ask somebody, how was your week? Well, my husband's been really sick. Okay, except I didn't ask about your husband. You know, and it's this part of our recovery is where we start getting the focus on us and not on them, and getting past this idea of the disease of pronouns. And part of expressing our feelings is to sort out, you know, my feelings from someone else's. Again, part of my illness was, you know, taking on the feelings of the people around me. You know, I come home at the end of the day and there's a little bit of ice in the air. And so now I'm playing the who are we mad at game, right? And so in communication, I need to be able to sort out what are my feelings and not someone else's. The other thing I need to do is to not tell someone how they feel, because I used to be pretty good at that too. And what I've learned in Al-Anon is that that's disrespectful, and I'm usually wrong.
Another aspect of this is accepting our partner for who they are. I need to be able to know ways in which Richard will be more receptive to something that I need to say. There's ways that because we've been together long enough, I know that he'll be able to hear certain words more appropriate, more aptly than other words. So if I can accept my partner, first of all, for who he is and where he's at in his personal recovery and or his day, we might have a bad week or whatever it is, I need to be able to accept him for where he is and to try and broach the subject in a way in which is going to be more acceptable to him.
Yeah, if we're going to measure the quality of the communication by the result that it produces, it becomes important to take into account what state the person who's receiving our message is in. We do that all the time with newcomers in meetings, right? We don't tell them the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about the program of recovery because they're not equipped to hear it. Instead, we just, you know, we give them a hug, pat them on the shoulder, say, keep coming back, and we give it to them a teaspoon at a time. Okay, what this is about is taking that same principle and applying it in those more difficult conversations in our home life. We also need to pay attention to body language. Up to 60% of communication is nonverbal. The way that we hold our head, the way that we shape our mouth, whether we, you know, rolling our eyes is a very powerful nonverbal communication. Whether we, you know, stand there with our arms crossed or lean forward in the chair as if we're paying attention or lay back as if we're falling asleep. All of that sends a nonverbal message to the person that we're communicating with. And one of the things that Al-Anon's taught me is to pay attention at least a little bit to what are the messages that I'm sending to the person on the other side of the room.
Okay. Beware of inflammatory words. Words such as always, never, should, bossy, others say, no better, but, whatever. I hate that one. Whatever. The always and never. Some of these words, it's not just communications with our partner. It's communications with ourself. I don't know if you've ever listened to what you tell yourself in your head. You probably do. I frequently still say to myself, you always do this, so you never do that. And it's like, wait, That's not true. Those are absolutes. And if I'm trying to do something different, I might usually do something, but I don't always. And that's also not true of my partner. So I can't say, well, you never put the dirty dishes away or whatever it is. It's just not true. And it also really puts the other person on the defensive. It's not a great way to have invite somebody into a conversation with you if you're using these particular words.
So once we've mastered the encoding a message and passing it on in a way that we hope is going to be meaningful, the other half of good communication is receiving the message and decoding it. Becomes important to practice listening skills. Again, I got here with really poor listening skills. I had great mind reading skills, I thought, but poor listening skills. And what I had to do is I had to go to an awful lot of meetings that didn't allow crosstalk so that I could learn how to listen. That's probably the single biggest tool that I've had in learning how to listen was you made me listen. And what I've had to do, too, is to learn to hear what's actually being said rather than what someone is saying or what I'm afraid they're going to say. I remember back in high school bringing home a report card that was all A's except for one D, one bad class. So I got home. We got out early that day. I got home about noon, and I spent, you know what I spent the afternoon obsessing about, right? That the first thing out of my mother's mouth when she saw this report card was going to be the question about the D. So when she looked at the report card and said, well, what happened to this class? She didn't know it, but by then we'd already had a four-hour conversation. I was frustrated and angry and afraid, and I blew up at her. I mean, I just went volcanic. And that wasn't what she said. You know, all she did was ask me a simple question, but it's not what I heard. And an important part of good listening skills I've learned is to reflect back what I hear. And what that does, it gives me the opportunity to confirm that I actually heard the right thing. Okay. To say to Karen, okay, what I'm hearing from you is ABC. She goes, no, it's actually ABD. Oh, okay, I get it. Now, the other benefit of that, not only do I get better clarity out of that, but I get to reinforce for my partner that I'm paying attention. Okay, I get to affirm for her in that conversation that I'm actually participating, which is a new thing.
So many times we just need to be heard. You know, pre-program, if something was bothering me and I tried to share that, it almost was as though Richard was trying to fix me or the situation. And often, I just needed to be heard. And that's what these kind of communication skills are bringing to the party, is I feel heard. You know, don't need to fix me, I just need to be heard. One of the things that we've sort of touched on, but just what we do, this works for us, is if we have one of those contentious subjects, such as finances, again, don't broach the subject just out of the air, let's talk about this right now. I need to talk about this right now. Well, it's the, honey, I think I really do need to talk about the finances. I believe it's in our best interest to sit down and have that conversation. Now, I would appreciate if you would make some time on Saturday morning so we can get together and we'll do this. You know, we actually make a date to have this conversation. We've done this with finances. We've done this with sex. We've done this with chores. And that's for me, chores is a big one. Just division of labor within the context of a household. And what's really kind of neat through going through this process is, first of all, finding out what's bothering me. What is really bothering me? Being able to put that into a few words, into a nice, simple little sentence, and say, you know, I really need to sit down and have a discussion about chores. let's get together on whatever day and let's go through the division of labor. Very easy thing. Now, at one point in time, just even saying that would have made my heart just pound. So let's get together, let's have this conversation. What's really kind of cool is, on some of these conversations, is the person, first of all, who extended the invitation gets to be the chairperson. It's more or less like an actual little meeting. The person who extends the invitation is the chairperson. The other person sits down in the other chair, or sometimes it's on the same couch and we hold hands, whatever it is that's being discussed. And the chairperson is the person who brings up the initial issue and sets out his or her perspective on that particular issue. As Richard was saying, then we practice, after that person is done, the other person reflects back their understanding of what has been said. And then we go through a process of trying to clarify what has actually been said is what has been heard. Because very frequently what I say is not what you're going to hear, just because of who we are in the situations that we're in. So this is what I have heard you to have said, is this is what you meant. And through working through that, we go back and forth. Once the person who is doing the listening end hears what the chairperson has had to say, they then get to present their perspective on that particular subject. And we go back through the process again. Now, the goal of this is to actually have a win-win situation. It's not to actually bring somebody's character defects and everything to the forefront. That's not the objective. The objective is for each of us to have participation in the daily workings of our lives, to actually be a participating member of this coupleship. And that can only be done when we don't have an awful lot of subjects that we're not clear on, that we're burying and we're putting behind walls. And we had an awful lot of closed subjects, an awful lot. And it's through those walls, you know, that our relationships break down. So this whole process has been just a godsend. It really is what this has been. And it's only been through the process of Al-Anon. One of the things through that is acceptance. Like, we need to accept our partner's perfections as well as our own. And sometimes we need to grant our partner the right to be wrong. They may be right. It can happen. Actually, what's really kind of funny is in our household, we have a calendar. And sometimes Richard's actually truly right. It happens nowadays. And so we actually acknowledge that. So now it's kind of like, honey, you're right. Yes, you can put that on the calendar. Last year was a very good year. He had 3 red dots on the calendar. It was this year, I think he's up to 2.
Yeah.
Two. Yeah. So he has the right to be right. And that concept of, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? Sometimes it's just not that important. And sometimes it feels really good just to be able to say, you may be right. That's not an admission of defeat. You know what? He actually can be right. We can have different perspectives on the same thing. 2 valid different perspectives on the same thing, and it doesn't have to be an issue of conflict. And when it is an issue of conflict, and we have had something of that nature in the last bit, where we've had several conversations regarding a particular issue that we really needed to work through. And some of them ended on, I'm not willing, this isn't finished yet, we need to discuss this further. I don't agree with you. You know, there was different fears, different levels of fears that were coming forth. And they took several conversations in order to be able to work through. And we had to accept each other for who we were and our fears and still love each other through that. And there were an awful lot of conversations before we actually reached consensus on what the appropriate course of action was.
Yeah, part of granting someone else the right to be wrong means also accepting that they don't mean any harm by it. You know, presuming goodwill. I never at any point in the process that Karen was just talking about came away from a conversation with the idea that. It rhymes with which she's trying to ruin my life. You know, that thought wasn't in my head anymore. Recognizing that nobody ever sets out to be the bad guy. You know, we all make the best choices we can based on the information that we have at hand, and the internal stuff and defects of character that we're dealing with. Nobody ever sets out to be the bad guy. So sometimes it is necessary to agree to disagree, but we need to do that agreeably. Okay, we can't punish someone for thinking differently than us. That's not what we're about anymore. So now I need to tell you that this entire thing has been completely unrehearsed, performed without a net. What we would like to do is to invite any participation from you that you would. Sorry, we have about 5 minutes left. If anybody would like to come up and comment from the podium, we'd just love to have you do that. What I can tell you from my own perspective is that, you know, as dry as this may have sounded, it's made a huge difference in our relationship. I get to feel like a participating member of a marriage today. I get to be married to a woman who consistently behaves as if being married to me is a good thing. Didn't know that was available to me. And it really comes from having been taught by you to do things a little bit differently, to think about things a little differently, to look at them a little differently. Our literature says again and again that changed attitudes can aid recovery. That's really what most of this is for me, is a change in attitude. You want to say anything?
The back of that little card. We learn in time that it is not subjects which are controversial, but the manner in which we communicate about them and the elements of personal blame we add to them in anger. Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage, page 28. So thank you all for your participation. Thanks
for letting us share.